Welcome to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. Here with a full crew today. We got Drew, Ed, Thomas. I'm Walker. I'm happy to be back. Missed a couple of weeks. But I came back at the right time because we are going to talk about the Aussie GP. And I'm going to speak for myself right now where I say I think this was so far, I mean, we're only three races into the season, but this was by far the most entertaining race so far. A little bit of everything happening, drama all over the place. Let's get some thoughts. Drew, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, you said it. I thought it was awesome. We had, obviously, first and foremost, I don't want to be the first one. You know, I am going to be the first one to say it. The Max DNF, real early. Like, that just set the tone.
So nice.
Like, I don't know how many people around the world waking up at whatever time they were in their time zone, and they were just dancing in their beds or seats, wherever they were watching the race. And, you know, I think it's not fair to cheer for Max to, you know, DNF, because he is a fantastic race car driver, but we're cheering for the change. We're cheering for change. That's what we're looking for. And for we got
possibility.
It. Yeah. Just give me something else, you know? That being said, I did have like an F1 pool that I lost out in my first time doing like a race pool, because obviously we were picking Max as a one and I lost out on that. But that being said, I absolutely loved it. It was a fantastic race. What do you got on that one, Ed?
It was nice. I loved it. It was exciting in a sense that I finally saw Carlos Sainz just like really show his smooth operator and do a smooth operation. But I do have one question though before we get into it. Like when Max finally hit his DNF mode that he wasn't like something wrong with his brakes. Did Carlos Sainz overtake him when he was still like 100%, or was that overtake because of the issue? Because that's I've been trying to figure out, like watch the race again and again and again, and I don't think Max was having issues when Sainz overtook him. So that's like my biggest takeaway of the race. Is that an early showing of the revenge season for Carlos Sainz? But everything else, I don't want to take everything else away from the rest of the group, but that was my biggest takeaway. Thomas?
He did have brake issues. He did. He said that he was driving like with a rear brake lock on. So that's how Carlos got by him. That being said, maybe that was just a Max flex, you know, because he hates losing that bad. But Thomas, what do you got, homeboy?
I absolutely loved the race. I hope that sets a tone for the remaining races left, but probably not. It was fantastic. Not cool to cheer for Max DNFing, but at this race, yeah, it kind of is cool because holy shit, was it an interesting race. I absolutely loved it. And freaking Carlos Sainz and Ferrari and McLaren and then all this other stuff that happened with the other teams. So very, very interesting race. Hoping for many more races like this to come.
Yeah, so we're going to dive into all that a little bit further. I don't know if you guys saw this video. It was a bar somewhere in Australia and it was packed and everyone was watching the race. And as soon as smoke starts to kind of bellow out from that right rear wheel, the bar erupts in cheering. Like, it's just insane how loud and how raucous that place got because Max got a DNF. And I don't think we can, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be because he's going to come back. He's going to win a bunch more races this year. But one of the things it highlighted for me was when you remove Max from a race, the parity in the top 10 is pretty strong. Like there are obviously some contenders with Ferrari and McLaren seem to be up there right now, but you know, I feel like anywhere 1 through 8, like they all have a reasonable chance of scoring real points or even placing on the podium. So, you know, we talk about always wanting parity and competition in Formula One. And I think we have that. It's just hard to keep focus of that when you always have the same guy at number one. right? Which is why, you know, when we do our predictions, we tend to just kind of guess 2 to 4. But there's a lot to look forward to, I think, in the coming races. And I think Formula One 2024 needed a race like this year, because the first two, I think we can all agree, have been a bit of a snooze. 100%. Looking at Carlos, though, what a fucking stud coming back from surgery, down an appendix.
So hot.
Up a podium, though. Is he the second best driver on the grid right now? Drew, what do you think?
Yes. Yes, he is. I think he's, you know, the reality is I think he's one of the most underrated drivers on the grid. And it's funny because when you look at his pedigree and like where he came in and the teams that he's driven for and the success he's had, he's always just been paired up with that driver who's just seen that little bit more success, who's just seen, you know, a little bit more of the spotlight. And I think that it's important to realize, like, Carlos always shows up in a big way when he needs to. Like, look at the last opportunity when Max DNF'd and, you know, they had a chance to get on the podium and Leclerc was, you know, messed it up in qualies. It was the same scenario and he stepped up again. And so Carlos, you know, he's fighting right now for a future seat and he's doing everything he needs to secure himself, you know, a great seat. I thought at one point, you know, maybe Aston Martin was like punching for him. Like, was that going to be like a seat that was going to come up? Because who knows what Fernando Alonso is going to do at the end of the year. And, you know, I think with his success that Carlos has had over the last, you know, 6 months, I think the reality is, you know, now that that Lewis Hamilton is going to be taking his seat, I think, you know, Aston Martin's a B option for him. You know, I think, you know, his A option, like, could he be sitting in the Mercedes? Yeah. Could he be sitting in the Red Bull? Yeah. Like, could he absolutely take top driver's seat at the Sauber Kick team and kind of wait for Audi to kind of take over that team and be the number one driver there and show up in a big way? Do I want that to happen? I'm not sure. Do I think that Carlos has some momentum going? Absolutely. And I think if you take the momentum away from Carlos by sticking him in that Sauber seat for 2025, you know, we're kind of putting all our eggs in one basket, or he would be putting all his eggs in one basket on whether or not he thinks that Audi's going to be able to put together a car under the new regs. And that would be an absolute miracle as far as I'm concerned, if they can do that first shot out of the gate as a new works team. But I guess to kind of summarize my point, I think he's an underrated driver, and is he the second best guy on the grid? Right now he is. The last 6 months he is. To be the only driver to meet Max Verstappen in the last two seasons, I think he's very much punched his card to say he's the second best driver on the grid right now.
Thomas?
I'm going to agree, but also disagree. Is he the second best driver on the grid right now? Yes, because he does not give a fuck. He doesn't really have anything to lose. He's giving it all out. I also think Lewis, as much as I like to rip on Lewis, I still think Lewis has a lot of skill too, but he's just not given a good car this year, and he can't show that skill. I really, really hope Carlos goes to a good team. He does deserve it from the previous two performances. You know, when Max DNF'd, he ended up winning, and that's just, you know, crazy. And I agree with Drew. I hope he does not go to Sauber. I hope he would go to Merck or one of the other top tier teams and actually, you know, see where else it could lead him and see his performance. Ed?
I would say too soon to say, but he is consistent. That's like the one thing when it comes to racing that like really helps you perform, is that even if you have like a subpar car, if your consistency is there, if you're perfect on all the corners, if not perfect, at least performing to the extent that you're really trying to pick up speed, maintain your speed, and not making mistakes. That's why he calls himself the smooth operator. His driving style is consistency and just making sure that he, you know, doesn't have that much mistakes. What's been happening the past few years is that the Ferrari car is not really consistent when it comes to being healthy, being reliable. So now that they're really starting to become a little bit more reliable. They have the pace. They need to do a little bit more in terms of like pacing with Red Bull. But for me, we'll see for the rest of the season. Too early to say that Sainz is like the second best. Too early to say that, who knows, maybe there might be a resurgence of Lewis. Leclerc might see this as an issue that, hey, Lewis comes in, I'm no longer the number one driver for Ferrari. I need to step up. So, again, too early to say.
I'm going to jump in quickly, Walker, and actually to all of you guys in relation to this topic. Have you guys noticed anything weird this race? Any coincidence? No?
Enlighten.
Nothing off the top of my head.
All right. You, so Thomas? This is yes.
Yes,
so Formulas One, Formulas One formula. Fact conspiracy. So get ready for this. In the last two non-Verstappen wins, when he DNF'd, Carlos Sainz won and George Russell has crashed on the last lap.
Yeah.
So there's one. And Russell also has crashed every race. Sainz has won. So that's, I don't know. It just happened twice now. I think that's a kind of interesting, weird, fun fact, conspiracy theory, kind of. So just thought I should mention that.
Coincidence, yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Thomas. And I think that's a really good segue. Because we're talking about Carlos Sainz, who's making the most of every moment he has in the car, taking the bulls by the horn and just like crushing it. And then we have George, who is just trying his darndest and just like doing his best out there. But to your point, you know, the last there have been two notable races in recent history where he's been in points, been in a decent position, and he's killed it on the last lap. Let's review the incident because, you know, obviously it was a bit of a weird incident with George. And then I saw hours later, I think I saw the penalty come through on Alonso, which I was personally a little surprised by. I'm not really sure if it is warranted or not. Actually, I do know what I think. I don't think it's warranted. I think George just needs to, you know, I think he probably just misjudged the speed entering the corner, lost traction, and you know, binned it. But what was your take on that? I guess it was the last two laps to go. How Alonso drove that corner. I know there's telemetry out there. There's all sorts of videos and telemetry showing breaking points and how he slowed the entry speed into the last corner. How do you classify this incident, Ed?
I would say that it's a racing incident, but the driver in me says that you need to do that in order to keep the guy at bay. In order to keep Russell at bay, because like he was really hunting down Alonso. He wanted that. He wanted that place. He wanted that, you know. Oh, look at that. Look at that jacket right there.
In support.
For anyone who's not
protest, which is it's a bad bit for a podcast, but
I know, but like for anyone that's not watching this on YouTube, our boy Walker here decides to put on his Aston Martin jacket, and
she's slick. I like that.
Very slick, I would agree, but still, I would say that FIA was too hard on him, even if the telemetry says it. I mean, there's how many racing incidents like that has been in the past, and those drivers did not have any issues or any penalties. So why make it different with our boy Alonso? I don't know. I'm starting to see a trend now that the FIA is starting to like kind of come in and mess around with the results. So maybe too early to say, maybe super speculation here, but if that were me, I would lift off just a little bit so that it'll be like a brake check and be like, if you're too close to me, I have the corner. You either crash into me or crash into the wall. I'll give you that choice. Drew, what do you think?
All right. So I listened to a podcast, and one of my favorite people is Brittany Collins. I don't know what your guys' opinion is on her, but I think she's absolutely fantastic. And yeah, she said it in very plain language because someone asked her this question and said, like, hey, like, do you think that this was an unsafe kind of play that Alonso did? And she said, listen, like, the reality is that like these drivers all drive at a super high level. These cars are moving fast. These are some very fast corners. And she's like, understand it in the way that like you drive your personal car at home. She said, if you're coming up to a traffic light and you're slowing down and there's a car in front of you, she said, imagine that car slamming on its brakes 100 meters earlier than a normal person would. So if you're not paying attention or you're not like on that, it's out of the norm to do that. And so even when you are paying attention, she's like, and I imagine George Russell was paying attention. These guys are driving fast and this is what they do. It was a very unusual thing to happen. And when you're, you know, shifting, you know, that kind of G force from left to right in these super high speed corners in Australia, the reality is that like, if you get caught in a pocket of dirty air and all your downforce just gets, you know, eradicated, you're going to lose it. And the only reason we're discussing this topic is because George crashed, and not that it was like a super bad crash, but the crash then landed George upside down in the middle of the racetrack. And I don't know if you guys have heard the onboard of George like screaming for a red flag. It actually gives you shivers because like sounds like he's terrified. About to, he was absolutely terrified and rightfully so. And I think his race engineer jumped on very eloquently and was like, hey, listen, what's that kid's name? Anyways, it was another driver behind you. He's a few seconds back. You'll be okay. Everything's fine. He's screaming for a red flag. And like, when you hear that, you're like, wow, you know, like Bernie said, the reality is that the only reason we're talking about this is because a bad accident happened. She's like, there's a few incidences where this happened before and nothing bad happened, but this needs to be checked. And like, Fernando is a great driver. Is he a little cheeky sometimes? Does he pull out some of these, like, I'm an old guy, deal with it kind of moves? Yeah, he does 100%, but he just got put back in his place. So I think driver safety should be first and foremost over anything. And, you know, anything we can do to, you know, avoid these incidences is the best thing. What do you got
on this one, Tom? So you think the penalty is warranted then?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
100%.
See, I fully agree with that. What everything Ed said, I think that, first of all, FIA is getting a little bit too involved, and I'm starting to see a little bit of a pattern too. 20-second penalty for that, I don't think that was warranted, especially, you know, when at the time I was watching the race, I personally didn't see anything wrong with it. Obviously, after the race, you know, you do some research and everything. But even then, like, you know, what Drew, you said, he's paying attention and everything. Clearly, he wasn't paying that close of attention either. You know, you could argue on that as well. I think, I don't know. I really don't think Fernando is warranted a 20-second penalty. I think that was way too harsh. George maybe miscalculated something. You know, even if Fernando broke a little bit earlier too, again, we don't know his point of view. You know, we're just talking about Russell right now, what he saw. Maybe Fernando reacted something differently to something different. We don't know. Am I sad that George crashed? Yeah, you know, I'm glad that he's okay. You know, it wasn't as serious as it could have been. 20-second penalty is not warranted.
So I want to touch on this a little bit more because I think the example that Bernie Collins brought up is very relevant to kind of this conversation and the comparison. And one, you know, the comparison that she used was a road incident, right? Where, you know, obviously you're driving this red light. It's not a competitive environment. Formula One racing in general is a competitive environment. So at what point, you know, and the sport is inherently dangerous, right? Someone, you know, dive bombs down into a corner, right? And wheels clip or whatever. We see countless incidents where people make judgment choices, trying to like get ahead, trying to stay ahead, and it ends up in a shit show where someone ends up in a wall, right? So at what point do we start to penalize drivers for just being competitive? Like, was it a, you know, we have people comparing it to the incident with Max and Lewis from a few years ago, right? Where Max did a brake check on Lewis going down the straight with no turns coming up, right? Is that the same thing? Is it a little bit different? Obviously, the way they handled it was very different, but when do you start to remove the competitiveness from the racing? And at what point do you intervene for, you know, quote unquote, safety, Whereas you have countless other incidents where people are making bonehead decisions to stay ahead and stay competitive and try and win the race. I don't know what that point is, but I think in this incident, I think the FIA overstepped. And yes, it was a terrible accident, and it could have been a lot worse if there was someone right behind them. That being granted, that is just a part of racing at this level to an extent. I don't know. That's my two cents.
No, I would agree, because that corner is very high speed and it's blind going to the right. And where George crashed, entering the first corner, going to the right, and then as it swoops to the left, and that's the area wherein you can be flat out. And if a driver didn't see that, yeah, immediately George would be hit, like the actual driver, because it was leaning towards oncoming traffic. His car was leaning towards oncoming traffic. So that's why he kept on screaming red.
And he couldn't see one side. He couldn't see. Sorry? He was upside down.
No, he couldn't see. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he couldn't see, but like if someone was there at high speed and hit him, yeah, it would be really bad. It could cause him really bad injuries and bodily harm. So that's the side of FIA, and that's why I believe that it is like more of, to the extent that there could have been massive injuries or could have been even death that could have been caused by what Alonso did. And that's why it's more of like a judgment call about on the FIA side.
For sure. But the reality is, you know, if George didn't crash and he just like brake checked, everything was fine, Alonso got the whatever sixth place or whatever they were fighting for, we wouldn't even be having this discussion. There would have been no penalty.
We won't.
There would have been no review of it. It wouldn't have been a thing. The only reason, like you said, Ed, is because like there was, you know, a big possibility.
There was an incident.
That a big incident would have happened. So,
okay. But I mean, does this even count as a brake check? I mean, he slowed the entry speed into the corner. Is it really a brake check?
No, it wasn't really a brake check.
Like he changed his strategy and it caught George off guard. And, you know, it was a shitty outcome for George.
Exactly. But I think that was the result for it too. Like he wanted to make George feel like you back off.
For sure.
Or something's going to happen. Yeah.
And Alonso even posted on X, right? Like he said, like, hey, this is my, you know, rationale is that like all drivers and, you know, race people know that not every lap is driven the same way. Sometimes we lift earlier and coast into corners for fuel saving, tire saving. There's a bunch of things. Like we don't ever drive the same lap twice. We're not full out all the time. And so that was kind of his excuse for it. Obviously he's trying to sell the story, but you know, the reality is the FIA came down and did what they had to do anyway.
Anyways, you know who else had a shitty weekend? The entire Mercedes team.
Yeah, they did.
Fuck. No one had a good time down under.
Oh, no.
Toto Wolff wanted to punch himself in the face, apparently he said that, or in the nose.
And I saw that poll quote. I'm kind of curious what the context of that quote was. Like in what scenario did he say I want to punch myself in the face? But it might have been warranted given the weekend they had. Didn't seem like anyone had a good car. Lewis was absolutely disgusted, downtrodden, and then he's how many laps in and retires the car. Wasn't many. Maybe that was a blessing that he didn't have to drive that shit box for a couple hours. But what's their takeaway from Mercedes right now? Are they the fourth team on the grid currently after three races?
Yes.
Maybe fifth.
That, you know, even you know, like I was trying to look at like what did their quality look like? That was no bueno. Like they just came to this race and they had nothing going on. There was no track. There was at no point were those guys looking that it was even competitive above sixth place. Like you couldn't have strung together a hero lap and done anything with that car. They are progressing. Unfortunately, the direction happens to be backwards. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of frustration going on. Like Lewis has been, you know, very vocal about his frustration with the car. George has obviously been able to hook it up a lot better because he's out-qualied, you know, Lewis all of this year. And I think a few races back in the last year. So, you know, especially with the news that that Lewis is going to be leaving, I can imagine that, you know, Mercedes is just going to build that car around George going forward. But I think that even with that, they're not where they need to be. It's a really disappointing year for Mercedes in kind of the trajectory that they had last year has just kind of totally fallen to the wayside, and McLaren figured it out and Ferrari has absolutely figured it out in a big way. So they got a lot of work to do if they want to stay competitive, you know, even above Aston Martin at this point.
I don't have much to add. I agree with you, Drew. They're shit. Even if Aston Martin is giving them, you know, if they're fighting them, like, I just don't know what else to add. They need to get their shit together. Something's clearly not working. You know, Lewis is not happy. George is outperforming Lewis, but again, you know, barely, you could argue. Car's not competitive, and like you said perfectly, it seems like they're going backwards, not forwards.
I love how you can always count on Thomas for a nice, succinct recap of what's going on.
What do you think of Mercedes?
Shit. Well, there's not much said. There's shit.
Well, I let me ask a question to the rest of you guys. Do you think that this is pretty much, well, three races in, this is pretty much another throwaway year for Mercedes based on their performance for the past three races?
I think it's a throwaway in terms of them fighting for second or third in the championship. I don't think they're going to be gunning for second or third. I think fourth might be very lucky for them. But I do think this is not a throwaway year. I think they have a lot of development to do. And I think with their capabilities historically to kind of regroup and, you know, get something good out of their car, I think they have an ability to kind of, you know, repair whatever mess they've made. But I think the point spread's going to be too big because I think Ferrari is just too far ahead of them. And, you know, when both McLarens are landing on the podium in fourth place, you know, week in and week out, I think the reality is that they're just not going to have enough time throughout the year to catch up unless they find an absolute physical miracle on that car.
I'm going to give you an Edward answer. Too early to tell. From the beginning, it seems like they're not going to go any further. But, you know, I don't want to write them off yet either. I still believe and I still hope they are going to bring some upgrades. They're going to fix essentially the bullshit and they're actually going to compete again. But for the time being, for the next at least two, three races, I don't see that happening.
Speaking of write-offs, let's talk about Logan Sargeant. I think that was the only thing they could do in that situation is to put Albon in that car, but shitty situation for Logan. Doesn't even get a chance to wreck it and still has to sit out.
I had him pegged to do a red flag situation. Remember we talked about it in the last episode that had him setting up a red flag for the Australian Grand Prix. Yeah, I mean,
I think we all did.
To compare both drivers, really, I would pick Albon any day. But one thing I do want to say, though, like, there was a comment that Max Verstappen said that's kind of like, I guess if you want to take it to the team, like, no one else is going to drive my car. I'm going to flatten my car. Like, I love that he said that. But then again, Logan Sargeant is what, year two? Right now for you'd take one for the team, but that can only last for so long.
Max Verstappen has some big race energy. He's allowed to say things like that. You know, he has the ability to say, well, it's my car or nobody's car. Logan Sargeant doesn't have that. He has to understand that Williams doesn't have that budget. So, you know, when things like this happen, James Vowles has to make the smartest decision is which one of these two drivers is most likely to get me points. I saw an interview with him and he said the reality is that the bottom four, five, six teams are going to be fighting for points. And each one of those points is going to be worth tens of millions of dollars. So they need every point. That's right. Now, the slap in the face is that they gave it to Albon. He still didn't get a point. Even with George crashing and Alonso getting a 20-second penalty, he still didn't make it in the top 10. But those two Haas boys did. I'll give it to them, man. Haas has been absolutely tearing it up this year.
So basically, from Albon, I from Williams, I like how they said basically both of our drivers are equal. First of all, yeah, bullshit. They're definitely not equal. We all know they're not equal. We all know Albon has more favoritism there, which it makes sense. Second of all, I found that really, really hilarious as well how they expected him to score, Albon score points. He did not end up getting that. What would have been way more interesting and way more funny if he would have crashed. I think that would have been just hilarious in that case. Yeah, it must be hard being Logan Sargeant, just because wow, that's a big kick to the nuts. Like that just the team shows the world that they don't even trust you to score points. They trust your teammate, and that must be gut-wrenching. And it was a fucked up situation, messed up situation. But it was definitely entertaining and funny to watch in a sense.
Can I pose another quick question very quickly? Mm. Could you not assume that, let's say this situation happened with any other team, which teams could you think wouldn't do that to their other driver?
So, sorry, rephrase.
So like, question. Okay, let's take Kick Sauber. Like yep. if they only had one chassis going into the weekend and it was Joe Grandjean, do you think they would give it to Bottas?
Yeah.
I don't think they would. Now, like, okay, yeah, let's say Checo crashes the car or Max crashes the car and he needs Checo's car. Do you think they would give him to him, Max? Do you think they'd give him his car, Checo's car?
Yeah.
I think they would. That's what I mean. There's other teams that would do it too. It is the smarter play. If you want to look at points and probability of getting points, the reality is like they're still in a championship as a team. The Constructors' Championship is very real.
Okay, but you're talking about, you know, for example, Kick Sauber and Red Bull or Ferrari or whatever. You know, those are a little bit different compared to Williams and Logan Sargeant. So
Logan Sargeant is lucky to have a fucking seat. He is grateful
to be
present on the grid. Like, it is not a fucking birthright, bro.
The fire.
Yeah, like, you should be grateful that you even have a seat, dude. Anyways,
apparently the decision had nothing to do with last year, which I call bullshit.
Even if it didn't, he's still better. Albon's still better this year.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Listen,
he's better every day of the week.
All I know is that I could listen to James Vowles talk for days.
I want his voice bedtime stories. Yeah, right.
It's just his voice calm. Like it just like puts me at ease. I can just imagine like it's a shit show in that garage. He just comes in. Just calms everyone down, puts them to sleep. Yeah. Love that guy.
Yeah, I do too, actually. He's got a good vibe.
Let's close out our analysis of the Aussie GP by talking about the Aussies on the grid. We had, let's call three, with the most Australian of them being a Finn. I think Bottas had the weekend of his life. Never mind the race. They can't do a pit stop. He fucking finishes last. Doesn't matter. He just had, I think, the time of his life. This was like his big coming out party. I think he had a great weekend. Piastri was okay. He did all right. Danny Ricciardo. Everyone's pulling for him, but I don't see that mojo. I don't know what's happened.
No. I think Lando Norris was the better of the two McLarens. And I think Oscar Piastri left a little bit on the table. Like, I think there was a little bit more that he could have done to show up for his home race. Danny Ric just, I'm actually disappointed. You know, we were having a couple of discussions in the Discord channel, which I would like to take a brief moment right now to plug the Discord. The notes will be in, or sorry, the link will be in the show notes. Please join the Discord. It's a lot of fun. We got a lot of people in there laughing, joking, and talking about the races. It's awesome. That being said, we were having a little chat about this, and I think that, you know, you had mentioned, Walker, that I guess Helmut Marko or Christian Horner or somebody over there said that Danny Rick's got two more races before he gets the axe. So, you know, this was another weekend for him to show up. And, you know, we had a couple of predictions last week based on what we thought was going to happen between the two Aussie drivers going into their home race. And I think we all picked Oscar to have a much better showing. And he did, marginally. I think he probably had a little bit more in that car. But, you know, they did a great job. And obviously they got good points on the 3-4. But like, just to put this in perspective too, McLaren got more points this weekend than Mercedes has. Like, that's not bueno. Like, if that puts that in perspective there. But let's go back to your overarching question, Walker, which is the Aussies this weekend. And I think that that Danny Ric, he's running out of runway. There is just not a lot left where, like, they're giving him the grace because, yeah, he's a great entertainment. He's great marketability. He's a good person to have in the paddock. And, you know, everyone loves his energy. But that only goes so far. You need to score points. And when your fellow driver, Yuki Tsunoda, is absolutely dominating you in quality and in race pace, you know, that says a lot. And that seems to be a similar story to what happened to him at Renault, what happened to him at McLaren. And eventually, at one point, it's your fault, Danny Ric. And I love you to death, but, like, just be better. We want to have this conversation.
It's easy. Just be better.
Yeah, be better.
Just drive faster. Just,
yeah.
Come on, man. Duh.
There's two pedals. Hit the one on the right, bro. Duh.
Watching the race, it was a little bit, even watching the fans when Lando and Piastri had to do the swap, I could kind of imagine how Piastri felt. But I mean, what you said, Drew, you know, if Lando had more pace, which he did, it makes sense, right? And again, I agree with you fully too. It seemed like Piastri, you know, it seemed like he could push the car a little bit more, and for whatever reason he didn't, or he felt uncomfortable, or he wanted to play it safe. So anyways, 3 and 4 are great for Danny Ric. I am so sad to see what is happening to him, because I would love to see him on the grid, but reality is he's not there. He's not performing, and you know, part of it, he just has not got his mojo. It doesn't help that he's in a shitty car, but again, if your teammate is outperforming you, the car is capable of something, but so Daniel Ric is just clearly not using it, or is not comfortable with it, and he just can't perform. So it was very, very disappointing to watch him this weekend race.
Yeah, it was really painful, really, to watch what Daniel Ric was doing. I mean, the quality that he did, like the one that was stripped off of him, like he said that he was giving everything that he had in terms of pace, in terms of speed, and Tsunoda was still faster. So it's indicative also, this is with the same thing that Danny Ric said when he was at McLaren, that there's something wrong with the car. It's not me. The confidence is there. I don't think it is. I think from the how many years of Renault, McLaren, like just beating down on him in terms of his confidence and his actual, you know, pace, it's not there anymore. I think he is definitely in the twilight. As you said, Drew is in the twilight of his career. And as I mentioned also in the Discord too, like in comparison of like speeds between him and, or rather time between him and Nyck de Vries, it's very, very similar. First three races, same thing. Tsunoda was faster. I mean, I said in the last episode that Danny Ric could be removed midway through the season, just like De Vries. He's making it more abundant that it's going to happen. So the next two races, we'll see what happens to him. But at this point, even Horner is probably like, why did I even fight for this dude to get into the RBC? And he's not even going to show. Time will tell.
Well, he's got a couple of weeks to get his shit together, get his head right, put some time in the simulator, because the next race is in Suzuka in 2 weeks' time. Amazing track. Looking forward to that one. But to close out this episode, I can only think of one way, one thing left. Something that's been missing from the last couple of episodes. I know the outcry from the fans that we've received missing this segment has just been overwhelming. So thank you for reaching out. So name that sponsor. Drew,
name that sponsor. Song? Name that sponsor. Your favorite game. It's name that sponsor.
That was perfect. Thank you. So we all know how it works. I'm going to name three sponsors. You have to name the team and what they do. Very simple game. Hard to win. Start off with the first one, Tezos. Tezos. T-E-Z-O-S.
I'm going to say Ferrari.
Okay.
And clothing company or clothing brand.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Alpine and a watch company.
Williams Clothing Company.
You're all wrong. All completely wrong.
Oh, no surprise.
So Tezos is an open source platform for assets and applications backed by a global community of validators, researchers, and builders.
Duh. Says it right in the name.
Yeah, I know. So obvious.
It's a platform for deploying smart contracts. And the Tezos network achieves consensus using proof of stake. Clearly. Mm. And they sponsor McLaren. So there you go.
We were way off.
Way off. Although two clothing guesses, which is interesting, and no logistics. Number two, Alpine Stars.
Ding, ding, ding. They're on Alpine, and they make extreme wear for, like, motorcycles, like, dirt bikes and stuff like that. They make, like, protective gear, chest protectors, helmets, and boots.
Okay. Anyone else?
Mercedes. Same clothing brand, protective gear, racing gear, and whatnot.
Protective gear, same thing as Drew said. I'm not going to say Alpine just to not copy him. I'm going to say Aston Martin.
For the first time ever, I think, in the game show's history, we have two winners. Drew and Thomas, you guys are both correct because they sponsor three cars on the grid. They are on Haas, Alpine, and Aston Martin. And yes, they are protective motorcycle gear. There you go. Ed, you're wrong. Everyone else is right.
I used to rock Alpine Star stuff when I was dirt biking.
Well, there you go.
And Alpine just...
You knew this one.
It fits the bill.
Let's go with... Final one. Jack Daniels.
Alcohol company. And they are alcohol, whatever. And they are... They're going to be on... McLaren.
Okay.
Bourbon company, McLaren.
Yeah. Remember, we did that whole episode called Zach Daniels.
That's right.
Because of Zach Brown and him drinking Jack Daniels. We had the whole episode name called Zach Daniels.
Yeah, we got that. Thank you for explaining
That's what
it,
I remembered, too.
Did I
Thank you,
that?
Drew.
Oh, fucking hell.
I'm so sorry.
All right. You're all right. I think another first is that we have... Yeah, a consensus. Everybody's right. McLaren, alcohol, as we all know. And that's how you play. Name that sponsor.
Name that sponsor. The greatest game. It's name that sponsor.
Thank you, Drew. All right, everybody. This has been a blast. Lots of fun. We will be back next week. We're going to preview the Japanese Grand Prix.
Suzuka.
Until then... Don't forget to subscribe, tell your friends, join the Discord, leave a review. And thanks so much.
Ciao for now.